Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Jen and Melinda, who are monks at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you, Michael.
Great to have you on the air.
Nice to be here.
And I understand you are just coming out of the air, so to speak, to be with us.
That's exactly right. We landed yesterday afternoon.
Great. Tell us all about it.
Well, I could start, and then it's kind of fun because I think we have different perspectives in the sense that, you know, I'm kind of always have all the details and know all the business side of things. And what was fun about having Melinda on the trip is that it was her first time being in Zambia. And, you know, it's always fun to be somewhere with someone who hasn't been there before, because it adds a real fresh perspective.
Yes, yeah.
So I could fill us in on some of the kind of business side, and then we could hear from Melinda. So I would say the biggest thing about this trip, and it was one of our agenda items going into it, but, for folks who have been following the blog, Sherry's written some really great pieces. One, I think, has already gone out, and one is about to go out, kind of about the process of some of the things that came up on this trip. And one of the things that's always true is that we go over and we have a sense of what we're there to accomplish. And now we know that those may or may not be the things we accomplish.
Yeah.
And often the theme of the trip presents itself partway into the trip. We don't always know what the trip is going to be about before we get there. And so one of the things we knew going into this trip, that one of our objectives was to interview for at least one other staff person on the project in Zambia. And what was different about this than usual is that we were not looking to hire someone in Cantalomba. We knew that it would not be someone in Cantalomba because it needed to be someone who was sort of a liaison, someone who could be in really close communication with us back in the U.S., as well as someone who would be on the ground on the project in Cantalomba. And the reality of Cantalomba is that, the folks who live in Cantalomba are not people who have a lot of exposure to computers and technology and tend to not have a high level of education. Many of them, I would say by far most of them, do not read and write, even in their native language, Bemba.
Yeah.
And so we were looking for someone who, kind of a unique person, actually, someone who would be able to, you know, have strong communication skills, and so they'd be in communication with us here in the U.S., but also someone who has the sensitivity to be able to be in somewhere like Cantalomba, be able to be in communication with that community without having a sense of superiority. Like somehow I'm better than the folks here because I have an education and I don't live in a place like this and that kind of thing. So we actually put an ad in the newspaper looking for someone at the suggestion of another NGO who's done some work in Zambia, and that worked quite well. And we ended up interviewing 5 candidates and loved them all. It was actually kind of a hard decision.
Yeah.
But we ended up hiring 2 new women. One is a nurse. Having a nurse out in Cantalomba is just an incredible blessing. And the other is an accountant by trade. She said in her cover letter that she feels like she's in the wrong profession, that she really has a heart for wanting to help people. So she's going to be doing a lot of kind of microfinance education and that kind of thing for us on the weekends. She's going to keep her regular job for now. So she'll be doing a lot of assistance with the community on weekends. And this other woman, Mukonda, who's the nurse, is going to be out there 4 days a week. So bringing those 2 women on board was huge. And even already being back for it, you know, not even a full day yet, I can see what a difference that's going to make. I've already gotten emails from Mukonda. You know, I already have a sense of what's going on there way more than I usually do.
Wow.
So that was huge. And one of the things that came out of that interviewing process, and especially the process of talking with the folks in Cantalomba about this, you know, we're thinking, oh, this is great. You know, we've got this these women who are going to help us, and this is so exciting. And we go out to talk to the community, and what we got at first was, no, we don't want that. And what that led to was an extraordinary process with the community of exploring what that was about and why is there a mistrust of people who are not from Cantalomba, and you know, what's possible here, and even down to what's our relationship as the folks in the United States with Living Compassion, what is the cooperative sort of side of things, where just the folks in Cantalomba are making decisions, and what's our role in those decisions, and what's their role in the decisions that this kind of thing that we'd be making about hiring people. And it was just, it was extraordinary, Michael. It was something that we hadn't realized we were stumbling into, but it was quite an amazing process.
Yes, and you alluded earlier to Sherry's blog on the topic, and I found the whole thing just fascinating.
Well, I'm glad. It's something that we were feeling like there's so much to it, and to be able to communicate the nuances, kind of the richness of it as we were going through it, you know, we weren't sure we'd be able to. But I agree. I think Sherry's letter was quite effective in doing that, or I hope it was.
Yeah, it was for me. And as you know, Sherry said in her email, looking inward, never popular, always helpful, and to bring in that notion of projection. And I really got a sense of, you know, the bigger perspective of where the people in Cantalomba are coming from. And that reaction just seems so normal, given that.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. Yeah. I realize I could say volumes about it, but 10 minutes is not that long. So
yeah.
Let Melinda have a say.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to, it was really fascinating to watch that resistance to Mukunda, who is the person who's going to be doing the work of a nurse, among other things. And then the next day, or just a few days later, for her to go into the community and begin seeing people. And it was almost immediate that there was a line of 5 or 6 or 7 people waiting to see her. She sort of melted into the community. And to me, it seemed as though the acceptance was pretty complete at that point. And it was so much fun to see the contrast.
Yeah.
And for me, being there, having never been to a third world country, and seeing, it's just, there was so much about Ndola, about Cantalomba, that is so different from my experience, of course, here in the United States. And I think it's going to take me probably quite a long time to really absorb everything that I saw in that difference. Did you have a question?
No, it's just fascinating. Yeah, what you were talking earlier about how quickly I project it moved from big resistance to acceptance.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it seemed very complete to me in that.
Yeah.
And the impressions, you know, we stay in Ndola, which is a small city about a 20-minute drive from Cantalomba. And to be where there is such fierce poverty compared to even any poverty that I have seen in this country, it's just, it's really kind of astonishing. And to have that view of a light of lives that are so very different from our own, feel as though it somehow rounds something out for me. I don't know quite how to describe that, but one of the things that struck me was when you drive from Ndola to Cantalomba, and gradually the paved road turns into a dirt road, and the dirt road turns into really, really rugged dirt road. And all along all of those roads, there are people walking. And it's something we just don't see here. And it's people in all states of dress, from people looking as though they're going to city kinds of jobs, to people who are in rags, people who are maybe some folks who are obviously drunk, small children who some have shoes, some don't, and babies. Everywhere there are babies. It's really quite striking. And the women carrying the babies in chitenge, that bright colored cloth, chitenge sort of straps that they create. It's probably a word for it. I don't know what it is, but
yeah.
And the women carrying the babies also are carrying basins full of squash or cucumbers or laundry, and they're carrying those on their heads. And then they've got the babies. And it's really a sight that it feels like I would never really be able to take it in without having seen it sort of in person.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
So being there in person, there's a way of taking it in that you cannot get any other way.
Yeah, you can see pictures, but the pictures don't give you the smells that are there that are also very striking.
Yeah.
And they don't give you the feel of the dirt or the feel of the, I guess it's winter there now, and winter in Zambia is quite humid, pretty warm, and it rains a lot. So all of that feel, together with all of the people, it was just, I feel very, very blessed to have had the opportunity to be there in person and to have much more of a sense of what's being described by the people who visit there and then write blogs for us.
Yeah. And I got the sense, as you were describing the people walking down the street from every walk of life, it seems that in our culture, in this society, that often we're inside our cars or inside our homes, and there's not a really seeing people in that way.
Yeah. And the cars are, they drive on the other side of the road from the side we drive on.
Yeah.
I realize it would take me a very long time to be a safe driver in that culture.
Yeah.
And the person who was driving us, Muyunda, most of the time, was a very skilled driver. We didn't see one accident, which is astounding to me because of the way they drive.
Yeah.
You're going down a road that's full of potholes, and the people coming towards you are avoiding the potholes, and you're avoiding the potholes, and how they manage to avoid them without both winding up in the same place on the road is amazing to me.
Wow, it sounds like a very exciting experience for you, Melinda.
Yes, it was, as I said, I'm just very grateful to have had that opportunity.
Great.
Hey, Michael, I know we're over time here, but you and Melinda giving that kind of picture of the roads, it reminds me of my favorite joke that Moyunda tells, our taxi driver.
Okay.
He said, in Zambia, the way you know that someone's driving drunk is that they're driving straight. It cracks me up because Melinda's right. You never drive straight down a street. Never, ever.
Wow.
I mean, on the main highway from the capital, Lusaka, to Livingstone, the biggest tourist attraction, to the Victoria Falls, the largest tourist attraction in the country, full of potholes. Always swerving. So if someone's drunk, they drive straight.
That's too much. Wow. Jen, Melinda, thank you so much for the good news update. This is great.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. And now it's time for Open Air. And I'm excited to be joined by Melinda, who will be our facilitator tonight.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Great. And Melinda, I have a couple of announcements here that I'm going to read through,
okay.
And then we'll get to our callers. So there's still time to sign up for the next email class, which is called A Bizarre Tapestry of Misinformation, the Movie. And that class begins on February 1st, and you can go to the Living Compassion website to sign up. And as we know, the Africa team has returned. There are great blogs up there, and as Jen mentioned, it sounds like there's more to come about the trip you just returned from.
Yes.
There'll be a working meditation retreat at the monastery. That's coming up in March, the 8th to the 13th, and the details of that are on the website. And there are wonderful peace practices on the website. For people who don't know about it, each month there's a new focus for growing peace within us and around us. And I happen to know that they're really wonderful, and I really enjoy them, and they're great, and they're fresh and new each month. Melinda, we have some callers here.
All right.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hello. My name is Dixie, and I'm from Odessa, Texas.
Well, hi, Dixie.
Who is this?
This is Melinda.
Melinda. What I'm dealing with is my husband and I are building a house, and against my wishes, really hired a friend of his who's very inexperienced in building. And I'm just steeped in negativity and suffering over trying to get it built the way we planned and the way I want it, and frustrated with the builder not seeming to care what I want or listening to me.
Mm.
And he has completely cut off communication with me now, where my husband is in the middle. And if I text him a question, he'll text my husband at work, who will have to turn around and text me the answer.
Uh-huh.
Which is just driving me insane.
Yeah, so it sounds like a really difficult situation with this person who's a friend of your husband's and is doing a building job, and you're not being able to have the kind of input you would like to have, it sounds like, in the building job.
Right, and the builder continues to make mistakes, or there's miscommunication, and he takes no responsibility, and he's not willing to change it, or he asks us for more money even if we feel like it's his mistake, we have to pay for his mistake, and
uh-huh.
It's causing a lot of problems in my relationship and just general between just a range of emotions, between anger and sadness.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, and it sounds like a situation that's kind of it's kind of designed to create communication difficulties between you and your husband, given that it's a friend of your husband and the builder person is using sort of going through your husband to communicate with you, which I can really hear that's making it difficult in many ways.
So I guess I'm having trouble seeing anything other than what's wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And how are you working with it, Dixie? Are you finding ways to mentor yourself as you go through this situation that really sounds like a very difficult situation?
Well, I've been just preying on all my friends and relatives to vent to, and I know they're really sick of hearing it. And I had a friend tell me, I will be so glad when you get this house built, because every day there's a new tale of woe. And I always feel better after I talk about it, but I also feel like it's feeding it more, just continuing
uh-huh.
on that. And
yeah, so those times when you vent to friends, it feels good for a little bit, but it's also, you're getting a sense that it's somehow kind of cranking up the difficulty for you.
And I have considered other things, just totally bowing out and letting the builder build my house like he wants it.
And what happens when you consider that?
Oh, I just can't. It's, I know it feels like a control issue for me because it just seems so imperative that I get it like I want it, and I guess fear of what they would choose, because my husband did his bathroom before I married him. We've only been married 3 years. He did it in mauve, and that's just really not my style, and so I'm afraid it would just turn out something I really hated.
So there's this possibility, though, that you're considering of just saying, okay, you guys do whatever you're going to do, and sort of stepping back for now and sort of pulling yourself out of it, but then not too sure, given that you've seen something your husband did before that didn't have your input, and it sounds like it's not you're not wild about it.
Yeah, I guess I'm really not willing to do that, to just let someone else finish the house.
Right, right. So that's a really hard place, huh? Because it sounds like you're really pretty tired of the communication or non-communication that's going on around this. But at the same time, you don't want to just step out and sort of just let somebody else move forward with it.
Yes, and I think part of I feel like my husband, well, I know he's in the middle, but it certainly doesn't feel like he's on my side when
right.
I see things that are wrong. And he says, well, he forgot he told us that. And, you know, I guess he's just more accepting, or he doesn't care about the way things look. He cares more about the way things function. And so if the hinges are different colors, as long as the door opens, he's okay with that, you know, even though it doesn't match what I planned. And
right, right. So, Dixie, what do you think would be helpful to you? What is your sense of what you need to have to make it?
The other night I thought about taking the builder's sign and burning it, but
yeah.
But I was afraid somebody would see me, so I didn't do that.
Yeah. But a lot of anger.
Yeah, do I think is helpful? I want the builder to listen to me. And I know I can't change him, and so I hit the dead end there, too, because I want him to care about what I want.
Right, right. And do you have a sense that you're being able to really care, to sort of be with yourself, really caring about how you're feeling in all this? You know what I mean? That you're really being able to hear Dixie and what's going on for you as you go through this really difficult situation?
Maybe not, because when you said that, it makes me cry.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but the most important person to be on your side through all of this is you.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to do with that.
All right, does it feel like that you're okay with being really unhappy with what's going on? You know, that may sound kind of paradoxical, but yeah,
So I have a right to be happy, unhappy. I have a right to be unhappy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anybody would be unhappy in my situation.
Yeah, well, you're unhappy. And to really be able to, you know, to take that in and accept it. Accept that it's a situation that's really difficult. It's really not going the way you want it to go. And that it seems to be going that way.
Yeah, and I guess since I can't change it, well, you know, I always tell people there's three choices. You can accept it, leave it, or change it. And I haven't been able to change it. And I really wanted to fire the builder really bad several times. And my husband won't go along with it.
Uh-huh.
And so that's all I'm left with, really, is accepting that this is the way it's going to be. And I'm getting to the point where I expect every day something to go wrong. Because
yeah,
it has
a heck of a way to start a day, isn't it?
I'm not disappointed, you know, because I'm just like, okay, what's it going to be today? And it really is hard to find anything right.
Yeah.
Any in this whole thing.
Well, and one thing you know about getting to a place of accepting something is that does not mean you have to like it.
Yeah.
It says, I really don't like this, and to be with yourself in that state of disliking.
Yeah, I think there's some judgment about that, just coming...
Judgment about which part of it?
Well, because of things my husband says that I'm just negative and I can't see anything positive and...
Uh-huh. And so what you do is take that on and kind of agree with it?
Well, I guess there's a duality there because it's like, I mean, I agree that's probably what's happening, but also there's just an awful lot of negative going on, and I am
right
dwelling on the negativity, and I'm looking at that. So I guess there's a part of me that, you know, I have every right to be negative because of everything going on. But then there's a judgment about that, too, that I'm just a negative person and that's bad, I guess.
Right, right. That extra layer gets added on. So there's a situation that's really not working out the way you want it to work out. And what gets layered on top of that is that somehow feeds into some kind of belief about being a negative person. Kind of hitting you while you're down.
Yeah, and I'm kind of going back to what you said about, I don't know what your exact words was, but what would be helpful or something like that.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've also become just really hyper-vigilant about trying to head off problems before they happen and spending a lot of time on doing research on things. Like right now, I think the fireplace is installed wrong and it's not going to pass building code. And none of this is my job. And I think that's what makes me mad is I'm paying this builder and I don't feel like he's doing his job. And I'm
mm-hmm.
taking on that responsibility of trying to make sure it's done right. And it's taken all the joy out of doing this house. This should be a fun time.
Right, right. And have you spent any time kind of looking for things that are actually going okay? Are there any things you can find that...
Yeah, I like the paint color I chose. They
uh-huh.
couldn't hardly that up, you know.
Uh-huh.
It'd be hard to mess that up, but. That's about it.
Yeah. So a really difficult situation, and it sounds like it would be really helpful to sort of be on your own side in it's a really difficult situation. Things are not going the way you would like them to go. And it doesn't seem as though there's a way to change it for now.
Yeah, it's just get through it.
It's what?
It's just get through it. We have maybe 2 or 3 more months and we should be finished.
Yeah. And in those 2 or 3 months, how best to support Dixie in what you're facing?
Yeah, and I guess that's a good suggestion to just be that mentor for myself. Listen to that part that struggled.
Yeah, and let her know you understand how she's feeling. Sounds like she's got an uphill struggle on her hands.
Yeah, it feels that way.
Yeah.
So just accept it, that that's the way it is, and I don't have to like it. And
you don't have to like it, for sure.
Be compassionate with whoever that is that's suffering through all this.
Yeah, because it sounds like you really see that it could be a joyful process, and maybe there's a way to help those parts of yourself find the joy in the process, while at the same time, you know, knowing that it's difficult and there are a lot of things about it that you don't like.
Okay, thank you.
Well, good luck with it, Dixie. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Dixie. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have the privilege of being joined by Melinda, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Melinda, I can really relate to not getting what I want or having things not go the way I want them to.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's tough. And when we can get to that place of, you know, okay, I know you don't like it, and I'm here anyway, and I love you anyway. It makes the slogging through a little bit easier.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Melinda, I forgot to mention one thing earlier.
Okay.
That Sherry really wanted to be here tonight to facilitate, and her plane was just enough delayed that she couldn't make it here.
Yeah, that's a very long flight, and she certainly would have been willing to do the radio show, and sometimes the logistics just don't work out.
Yes, indeed. Melinda, we're going to stop, drop, and breathe, and then we'll be right back.
Okay, always good to do.
Yeah.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these 3 easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by VoiceBusters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Uh-huh.
Melinda. We have many more callers here.
All right, let's talk.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Melinda.
Hi.
Hi, it's Patty from Los Angeles.
Hey, Patty. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. I'm so happy I got to talk to you.
Oh, great.
I'm working with some big karma right now, and it's very challenging. And I'm getting information from conditioning that it's not going that well. But I kind of know that that's a lie.
when you say you're getting information from conditioning, I suspect that you're right there, not believing it.
Yeah. I get that because it's very vague. It doesn't really have any specific evidence to kind of back up its argument. And then, you know, when I sit down and I actually, go through, like, you know, the successes that I've had and all these kind of instances of practice working and, you know, and my life working, then, you know, I start to see, okay, this, you know, this information that I'm getting, it's just not valid.
It's wonderful to be able to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just kind of this, like, very subtle kind of murmur in the background. And, you know, it's like I see it with what I'm working with right now, which is a big issue for me, which is my writing. And, you know, ever since I got back from the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, I was just really energized by that. And, you know, I started for the first time in my whole life, I started having a regular writing schedule, a daily writing schedule. And, I can't tell you how much that means to me. It's like this person that has wanted this for so long and wasn't able to have it is finally getting it. You know, because I used to spend all my time avoiding writing instead of actually writing.
And so when you came back from the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, it sounds like you created a schedule that allowed you, that gave you the structure that you needed to be able to actually sit down and write.
Yeah, and then I watched as conditioning tried to derail me constantly, you know, try to talk me into doing something else instead, and, you know, gave me sometimes very compelling reasons, you know, why I should be doing this other thing that's more important.
And
you know,
it's
but,
so good to be seeing that, yeah, that that's what it'll do. You've got a schedule, it really works for you, and then in comes the little voices saying, oh, but you really need to be doing something else.
Yeah, it was like happening every single day. And
would try to pull you away from what you'd committed to.
But I've been, you know, keeping my commitment. And that in itself has just been this huge thing for me, because I'm proving to myself that I can keep my commitments and that I can, do what's best for me instead of following some plan that conditioning has laid out.
Yes, and that makes it all the more likely that conditioning is going to ramp up the attempts to get you not to do it, because I really hear it's working for you. You're feeling really good about yourself. The writing is really working, and all of that bodes ill for conditioning.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, and it's funny because when you say the writing is going well, like immediately I heard a voice saying, well, it's really not. It's not going that well.
But
the fact that you're writing sounds like that means it's going well. You know?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I totally see that. But it definitely is it's a constant. I just constantly have to remind myself that it's, you know, that the voices sort of assessing how things are going are not really that I really shouldn't be listening to that, because they're always there trying to assess, you know.
So what they're doing, so I wanted to be sure I understand, is what they're doing telling you that, yeah, you're keeping a schedule, but your writing isn't really going very well?
A lot of times, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And a lot of times it's not even verbalized. It's more of just this kind of vague feeling of dissatisfaction.
Ah, yeah.
I don't know how else to describe it. It's because it's not in words.
Right. And where do you feel it?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Probably, you know, in my solar plexus.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. So not even words, but you'll be there writing or you'll be whatever you're doing, and there's this vague sense of dissatisfaction in the solar plexus that has a meaning attached to it of this isn't really going well.
Yeah, yeah, or like, yeah, that wasn't such a great day. You know, that just didn't go that well.
Yeah, yeah. And do you look at the validity of that, of all of that that gets put together? You know what I mean?
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
So you have a day, and the end of the day, there's this feeling, and what's attached to the feeling is the meaning that day didn't go really well.
Hmm.
What evidence is there for that?
Oh, there's no evidence.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's the thing, is that I know that there's no evidence. I know that it's not true.
Yeah, yeah.
I
yeah.
know that intellectually.
Yeah.
And yet it's still there's that feeling of dissatisfaction that still lingers. And I
yes.
think maybe it's just a habit from doing it for so long.
Yes, you know, and it might be really interesting to excuse me, you know, the feeling you have when you let's see. This is a for instance, a feeling when it's gone really well, or when you've done something that you really feel good about.
Mm-hmm.
What about replacing? When you become aware that the dissatisfaction, that vague, didn't go so well feeling is there, what about
mm-hmm.
shifting your attention to the time that you felt, oh, that was good?
Mm-hmm. You know,
words,
I'm so... Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because that's actually been something that I've been thinking about lately. I kind of had this question for Sherry, because she talked about this in her email class, and in the last email class, and also at the New Year's retreat, this
uh-huh.
Idea of going to an experience of happiness or peace or joy,
yeah.
and you know, and just kind of experiencing that feeling by going
yeah.
back to that experience. And my question about it, I guess I kind of have this nagging like question about that, because sometimes I feel like, well, that isn't that kind of cheating, because you're going into the past instead of being in the moment.
Ah, are you sure? Or are
I don't
you
know.
Or are you, because the feeling when you get it is in the moment, right?
Mhm. Mhm. Okay, so this thought of, well, it's not really being in the moment because I'm thinking of a past experience in order to feel this way. That's just conditioning trying to get me to not feel that thing.
Well, it sounds like conditioning trying to talk you out of doing something that might work.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, it's like practice. It's like, okay, now how do I let's see, what's an example? Do you do any kind of sports?
Yoga, I guess you could call a sport.
Oh, well, yoga, when you really are in a posture and you kind of know that you've got it, the way you know you've got it is you've been there before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is this making sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Seems
right.
Like, okay. Yeah. So when the feeling you want to have is to replace the dissatisfaction habit with a sense of, this is the way I feel when things are going well. And it's finding that same place of, yeah, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
It's recreating and replacing.
Okay, yeah. You know, that the yoga metaphor actually really helps.
Okay, good.
Because
yeah,
I think what...
No, go ahead.
Well, the way that I have been working with it is to kind of, I guess it's in a way kind of going up into my head, because what I'll do is, okay, so the voice says that didn't go very well or this wasn't a good day. And then I'll kind of think about all the good things that happened and, you know, what I can feel proud of and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that does help.
Sure.
But sometimes it doesn't.
Right, because sometimes going into that kind of conversation, conditioning can use it just to take us back into, you know, the suffering loop.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah, because I think that like making that kind of a list it's very intellectual, and I'm not really feeling it viscerally the way
mm-hmm.
that I viscerally feel the dissatisfaction.
Right. I see what you're saying. And at the same time, it seems like a really good idea to show yourself that there is evidence other than the day didn't go well.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I saw this process happening at the New Year's retreat.
Uh-huh.
Because I had a nagging feeling through much of the retreat that I wasn't happy and that it wasn't going that well and it wasn't as good as the last retreat and blah blah blah. And and I knew that wasn't true, because I could see, you know, I could see how I was happy and things were going well and I was having insights and, you know, and it was wonderful, like being with Sangha and all of that. And then I got home from the retreat and I had my reflective listening call, and I started talking about all of these you know, great things that I had seen on the retreat, and I realized, wow, you know, conditioning told me that wasn't a successful retreat, and that's a complete lie.
Great. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's really, it's so good to see that, isn't it? Because we're in the habit of believing it. We're in the habit of, it comes along and there's just this feeling of it didn't go well. And what we can be left with if we don't explore it is it didn't go well. But
mm-hmm.
you had an opportunity to explore it and to sort of confirm for yourself that actually it went quite well.
Yeah, I think I used to just buy that assessment right off the bat and you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not anymore.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it really is going to have to keep on cranking it up, because it's condition, you know, the conditioning's program is to get us back into that place of believing there's something wrong, it's not enough, nothing's working, and so it's going to keep plugging away, which just asks that you keep coming in from the other side saying, nope, not going to believe this one. Nope, I don't think so. Where's the evidence?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm going to practice that yoga metaphor.
Yeah,
I think that'll be really helpful.
Great, give it a try and check back in and let us know how it goes.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Melinda. It's
Thanks,
really great
Patty.
To talk
Good
to you.
Good to talk to you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Patty. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have the great privilege of being joined by Melinda, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Melinda, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we will be right back.
Okay.
What would you do if you knew you could not fail? How free would you be? How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened to your beautiful heart?
This music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
Once you bathe in an ocean of roses, what if you swam in a river of
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. Melinda, we have many more callers here.
All right. Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Melinda. This is Beth.
Hey, Beth.
Okay, here
How's
it comes
it?
Again.
Huh?
Okay, got some pretty big karma I'm working with.
Did you say you got some pretty good karma you're working with?
Pretty big karma I'm working with.
Okay.
But I got an interesting twist today that's kind of throwing me for a real loop. I have a shop that I service. And a couple of weeks ago, some money went missing. And there was a great search for it. They showed me the videotape today where I had it in my hand, looked at it, and threw it away. I have no memory of holding $300 in my hand.
Uh-huh.
I remember postcards.
You remember holding postcards?
I remember holding postcards.
Okay.
And putting them in the recycling bin. But there it was on tape. I did it.
Uh-huh. And how did it get on tape? This was an actual videotape.
Yes.
Okay. And you're holding $300.
Yes, but I do not remember.
Okay. And you threw it away.
It shows me throwing it away.
Okay.
I get it, sabotage. I get it, you know, the experience and the experiencer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, that's kind of internal. But and then the external, I don't really know. I mean, I can't explain to the people that it wasn't me, even though it was me.
Ah, aha. Yeah. And this is somebody you need to explain it to?
This has been a very strong practice person in the last couple of years. And she's working with it with me in a practice manner.
She's working with you. Could you say the rest of that again?
She's practicing with me.
Uh-huh.
She meditates and feedback and that kind of stuff. She called earlier to see if I was okay.
Uh-huh. And
I realize this is content. I'm giving you content, but it's kind of... I don't know what to do with it.
And what does it feel like you need to do with it?
I think I've got emotions under control in some other areas where I shouldn't have some control, and I think some emotions are coming out. Never forget all that. That's all the mind working it over. I don't know.
And where does it feel like you would like to go with this?
Into the past.
into the past.
Yeah.
You mean have it be a done deal and not have to think about it again?
Well, I mean, paying the money back is obviously going to happen, but how can I trust myself if I'm doing stuff like that?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So this is money that belongs to somebody else?
Yeah.
Ah. That makes it a little bit more difficult, doesn't it? If it were your own money.
And I realize that this is all content, and there's other layers that are more useful. And I'm kind of caught in the content level.
Uh-huh.
But I think also it's like in trying to get away from the content as a form of denial.
And what would be helpful, Beth? What would be reassuring?
Yeah, I'm coming up blank.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, the feelings that come up are just wanting reassurance, wanting to not be alone.
And how would that be expressed? If you, in fact, were not alone and there was somebody there who was understanding and being reassuring, what would that look like?
It feels very young. It feels like these are the desires of a very young child. Like I want
uh-huh.
to fall in somebody's lap.
Yeah. And what might that person say? There you are sitting in the lap.
I think this is indicative of the last couple of months is I can't hear anything. It's like you're asking the questions and it just goes blank.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And is the feeling there of being held in a lap?
No, just the desire for it.
You sure the feeling's not there? You go there a little bit?
Just coming up blank. Which is followed by feelings of, I should be able to do it.
How about describing the desire? Did you go there?
It's just kind of just like standing outside a shop, looking in the window.
So it's like you're looking, you're aware the desire is there, but it's somewhere.
It's not for me.
It's not from you. It's somewhere outside of you.
Yeah.
And if you were actually able to feel it, what would it feel like?
Like a less tightness in the chest, like I could sleep.
So kind of a relaxing?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, a letting go.
There's a real strong wanting to know how I could do that.
And can you get a sense, Beth, that you actually did it for a second there?
That I let go?
Yeah. The conversation.
It's like a whisper in a storm.
Say it again?
It's like a whisper in a storm.
But it's there. And conditioning's really invested in not having you, in having you believe that something that you can do is in fact something you can't do. But you just did it. Can you get a sense of that?
I'm really afraid of that desire.
So maybe to reassure the one who's afraid. Because that's okay too.
I don't think I'm up to this.
Yeah, and consider that that's, you know, that's partly, at least, if not entirely, a conversation.
It's also a small, yeah, I know it's ridiculous, and you're, there's some larger stuff going on than this. That I can't stand in the face of.
I couldn't quite understand the rest of that sentence.
I can't stand in the face of.
Oh, that you can't stand in the face of. Aha. Are you sure? And the reason I'm saying that is that my sense is that you just actually did stand in the face of it for it to even come through like that. You there?
I'm here.
Yeah. You know, I wonder, Beth, as you said that, if there's some criteria that's been established that determines whether you can stand something or not. You know what I mean?
No.
That if you have a lot
some
of feelings.
Criteria.
That if you have a lot of feelings and if you cry and if you feel afraid, that somehow you're not being who you're supposed to be.
And in danger.
That you're in danger. Yeah. That can make it really hard to have a bunch of very human feelings. Yeah?
Yeah.
Because maybe having all the feelings and being with yourself as you go through them is really standing in the face of it's really being up to the task.
It's kind of like this happening today. The content.
Yeah.
Is the last pylon anchoring me.
Is the what?
That's this anchor. It's the last anchor.
Ah, the last anchor.
Without this, I have. Nothing holding me here.
Reminds me of the book title, When You're Falling, Dive.
Yeah.
Sixes
don't know what they want.
Uh-huh.
I'm really familiar with that.
Mm-hmm. Which kind of puts you in the place of finding out what life is giving you. So is there a way that you can imagine having that experience of feeling like you're being held? Wrapping yourself up in the blanket of acceptance.
I think that's what my cats are for.
Aha. Yes. They show you, you show them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a good deal.
Can't hold on.
Mm-hmm.
There's no faith that I can swim.
Yeah.
I can feel the pull toward being the victim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not much fun, is it?
Not very useful.
It's definitely not useful.
Kind of a gnawing on the bones.
Mm-hmm. So learning how to float. Get a sense of that?
Willingness is the key.
What?
Willingness is the key.
Willingness is the key. It's got a real familiar ring to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and to even accept unwillingness if that's what happens to show up. That's where that blanket of acceptance comes in handy.
Thank you, Melinda.
Thank you, Beth. Check back in, huh?
Okay.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You've been listening to Open Air. Tonight we've had the great privilege of being joined by Melinda, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Melinda, it's after 6 o'clock.
Gosh, where did that time go, Michael?
The time went, and I'm disappointed that there are several folks that we did not get to speak with tonight.
Well, as usual, we'll hope that they call in early next week, huh?
Yes. Melinda, I'm grateful for your presence tonight and for everyone else who was involved, the callers and the listeners and all of us.
Thank you, Michael. Me too.
Okay. Thank you, Melinda.
Good night.
Good night.